Ryan, we all know the interest rates are high and you want to make sure you have the best real estate agent possible working for you. And that's where Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group can help you. Not only are they very experienced, they've already proven that they can get results, right? So, and additionally, when you're selling your house, they're going to give a portion of the commission, 1% of that 1% of that commission over to Dinkytown Athletes, to the sport of your choice. This is not a small sum of money. They've already sold at least one house where over $4,000 went to support Dinkytown Athletes. It's just a phenomenal way for you to be able to support Gopher athletes, and more importantly, be able to get a good representation when selling or buying your home.
I mean, it seems pretty simple to me. If you're going to sell a home, they've already sold one for over $50,000 over asking, seven offers, and 1% of the commission for them goes to Dinkytown Athletes, to whatever sport you choose. So if you want to support Dinkytown Athletes and you don't know how, but you're also got to be selling your home and you want to get the most bang for your buck, go to teamdinkytown.com, or you can give them a call today at 612-250-8562.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buehr.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys to Hate Week as the Golden Gophers travel down to what has been a house of horrors for them for largely our entire lifetimes, Luke. Minnesota has won twice in Kinnick Stadium. In 40 years, they've won once since 1999. I was 7 years old, and I'm 31 now, but it is Minnesota taking on Iowa. How much bacon have you had this week, Luke?
I have some going on the grill tonight. And yes, I said grill because I'm trying to run multiple cooking surfaces this evening. So using some tin foil, you know, get it going.
I don't know that I've seen, and I haven't seen in a long time, somebody put bacon on a grill. But look, why are you putting bacon on a grill?
Well, if you start the grill cold and you put it on low and you bring it up, it does a really nice job of rendering out the fat at a reasonable rate. I shouldn't say rendering out, but rendering it. And my wife doesn't like the smell in our house. So, yeah, that's how we do it.
Well, I'll tell you this much. I don't know if it's popular, unpopular, especially this week of the year. I think bacon is incredibly overrated.
Okay.
It's okay. But if you convince yourself it's anything better than okay, we don't see eye to eye.
I think it's good. I don't know that it's like, I don't need to say that it's going to, you know, replace the staple of like chicken or ground beef, but yeah, I like it.
How was your bye week?
It was good. Yeah. I think this is the first bye week we haven't actually recorded. It was, you know, I talked to you a lot less than I normally do. It was very odd.
Yeah, normally Luke and I are in constant communication, I would say, throughout a day, whether it's just he and myself or maybe Derek Burns is looped in there as well. But did I tell you I went to Vegas?
No. So I actually learned a lot about, you know, how you spent your bye week on your other podcast, which is really odd because I do listen to that one. I'm doing a good job of that. I'm trying not to duplicate for our listeners.
Well, I'll say this. If you listen to this one and you want one that I would say is less in the weeds, much more overarching Gopher takes or Big Ten football, Parents Bear with Chip Scoggins of the Star Tribune and the man who wears 57 hats and refuses to pay me for 3 years worth of coffee every week, Justin Card. It's a good time.
Yeah, you guys do a nice job. I mean, it's very much a... I would say from a podcast perspective, if you're looking for, you know, the kind of the normal terrestrial talk radio approach, it's very similar, pretty high level. It's good stuff. I enjoy it. I'm not a big terrestrial radio kind of guy myself. Now with podcasts and stuff, I know Justin, if you're listening, I do occasionally tune into your afternoon work. I do think that you guys do a pretty good job there. But in general, especially when I travel, I do not seek out the sports radio stations in the various towns I go. And I will tell you what, Philly is like the worst. I've tried. It's so bad.
Shock Jock Radio, Philadelphia.
Yeah. So, all right. So we should probably get into maybe some housekeeping stuff before we move forward. Any housekeeping items coming out of the bye? I mean, a big part of the bye is getting healthy. And like you said in our breakdown, when a bye comes, it always comes at the right time because you always need it, right? The Gophers have had some injuries. And I imagine that you've asked PJ Fleck about those injuries. I assume that he gave you the standard line, which is you'll know 2 hours before the game. Thank you, PJ. But in general, yeah, any kind of housekeeping items we should get to here. I don't even know if you want to mix in some recruiting, but obviously talk some injuries as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what they got to do only on Friday this year because they some recruiting calendar changes within college football. Minnesota doesn't have as many evaluation days as they would have, say, last year, so they got to be very picky with when they go out, how they go out, who they go see. But I'm sure if you were on social media at any point over the weekend, you heard or saw that PJ Fleck made the trip up to Northeast Minnesota, went to Hermantown because that's where Esko was playing, where now newly minted, I think, top 80 player in the country, Coy Parrish. Minnesota commit, just got offered by USC. I know everybody's losing their freaking mind over that because you're all Minnesota fans, and I get it, but also it's tiresome. So I've been talking about that a lot on Gopher Illustrated. Coy had another fantastic game. I mean, he is the real deal. They were at a bunch of other different games, have those names, faces, I mean, on Gopher Illustrated as well. But I think a lot of it, even from talking with the coordinators today, asking them, how was the bye? What did you do? Yada, yada, was just, I would say offensively, it was interesting to hear how Harbaugh talk about how he was, I would say, in his own words, harder on some players than maybe he would be in a normal game week because they have a lot to correct and they know that. Whereas on the flip side, you know, I'm asking Joe Rossi about, he loves to talk about how every individual defense, which is true, can only play up to a certain capability. Now, every capability of every year's defense is a little bit different. So I asked him, now that you got 6 games worth of data and you've had some time to reflect on the bye, what do you think this 23 defense is capable of? And he kind of smirks and hits me with, well, we're going to find out starting this weekend.
So, thanks. So,
yeah. I mean, I get his answer, but I also had to ask the question. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's more so about trying to figure out what you're good at.
Yeah.
How do you continue to make that even better? Figuring out what you're deficient at. How do you try and rectify some of that so they don't become glaring holes for the same second half of the season? And then Minnesota, I would say, maybe this year more than less from what I've been able to glean from talking with some officials behind the scenes is, yeah, there was self-scout, but I would say maybe there wasn't as much self-scout as a normal year because I think they have a pretty good idea of what they have to get better at. And there was maybe more of a focus on the team coming off the bye, which obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you know it is the number 24 Iowa Hawkeyes. So sounds like they were able to get into that a little bit later in the week before giving the players some more off time to be able to rest and recover with their bodies. But it's certainly going to be interesting to see because you got a team like Minnesota who's coming off their bye, Luke, and then you have a team like Iowa who is, as we'll get into in the injury report, very much banged up. This is their 8th consecutive game. Their bye week comes after Minnesota. So we're going to see if one team looks banged up or if one team looks rusty coming off the bye or if it's a combination of both heading into Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Obviously, key members from an injury perspective for the Gophers, Cody Lindenberg, who we've been following all year, Darius Taylor, additionally, is one that we're probably monitoring. I suspect you're willing to place a wager, but you have no inside information to tell our listeners.
Yeah, I think the 4 injuries that come to my mind, at least, that I'll be watching for Minnesota heading into this game are running back Darius Taylor, which I said it before the bye, and I'll say it again after the bye. I would be pretty surprised if Darius Taylor doesn't play in this game. He was essentially a game-time decision. Pete Thamel said as much, which elite Pete and PJ Fleck are very, or I would say that Brian Harlan, I don't know, if somehow you came across his podcast, PJ Fleck's agent, we're well aware that you love to feed everything to Pete Thamel before the game and not give it to the local media, which
Yeah.
I'm biased because I'm local media guy, but it's annoying. I had heard going into that Michigan game, like that Tuesday, probably, that Darius wasn't going to go. I don't know why it came out before the game that he was going to be game time, because Minnesota wanted to give him an extra week or two to really get ready for Iowa. But I would be surprised if Darius Taylor doesn't go. Chris Ottman Bell, that's an interesting one. And why I say it, Luke, is when I was at the complex today, you know who walked past me? It was Chris Ottman Bell. You know, Chris Ottman Bell walks and looks just fine. I truly believe with him, and I know he's been out the last couple of weeks, I don't think he's necessarily re-injured anything. Maybe it's just him getting through some scar tissue from the surgeries, him still trying to find his explosiveness. But I'm not expecting a lot from Chris Ottman Bell going forward yet. And then you've got Cody Lindenberg, which that is the giant elephant in the room to me. Mm-hmm. Is this the week he makes the return? Because this has been the week a lot of people behind the scenes from Minnesota have been eyeing since he had that setback around the North Carolina game, is get him ready for Iowa. Well, I can say that he's gone through at least some of practice this week from what I've heard. But the question is that going to be enough for him to make his debut on Saturday? I feel pretty confident in saying he's at least going to warm up, which would be the first time in about a month he's done that before the game, to mm-hmm. see how he feels. But getting him back for this linebacking core would obviously be massive. And then finally, I think people may have forgotten about Jack Henderson's injury. Yeah,
good point.
Yeah, the slot player from Minnesota who's been playing really well, especially since that North Carolina game for the Gophers. I think he is going to be more of a coin flip. And if he can't go, we're going to see everybody's favorite Iowa State / Auburn transfer, who is newly eligible, that you saw in the second half against Michigan, and Craig McDonald, probably get his first career start as a Gopher. And it's going to be important, because this Iowa offense is something to where Fleck talked about it on Monday. Minnesota's defense has to break the boring, because Iowa's going to do a lot of 12 and 13. You're going to see a lot of the same looks, little nuanced differences within each one of those looks. But I mean, as injured as Minnesota is, Luke, I would argue on the flip side, now going into their eighth straight game, Iowa is just as injured, if not more.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know that they're down the tight end, the two tight ends, the quarterback, you know, both the transfer tight end and the transfer quarterback were both of them from Michigan. I know Cade McNamara was Eric All also from Michigan?
He was.
Yeah.
So you've got Iowa's starting quarterback got injured a few weeks ago. Cade McNamara, they paid a premium to get him from Michigan. He goes down with a knee injury. It's unfortunate. He's out. So in is, and we'll talk a lot about him today, a 259-pound quarterback in Deacon Hill, who is not very good or hasn't looked very good through his first extended game action. They're also going to be without their top two tight ends in Luke Lachey. He got injured in September. He's out for this game. Eric All got injured last week, the Michigan transfer. He was their leading receiver, especially with Deacon Hill the last few weeks. He got injured. He's now out for the rest of the season. I would say their third string tight end as well, Addison Estrenga, I believe is how you say his name. He's questionable for this game. I mean, they're just running out of bodies at tight end. And I'm not here to tell you, I mean, it's still Iowa. It's still tight end you. They mm-hmm. still have yeah. bodies there that are talented. My thing would be with this, and we're going to talk about it on this podcast, is you go from having experienced guys like Luke Lachey killed them last year along with Sam Laporta.
Yeah.
That's why part of why Iowa scored as many points as they did is tight end receptions just killed Minnesota. Well, now they're down to potentially their tight end 4, tight end 5, and tight end 6. And why I say all three is because Iowa loves to go 12 and 13 personnel, which means you've got 2 or 3 tight ends on the field. Well, they can still field the team with 12 and 13 personnel. It's just they're going to be young.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's got to be, if that's what Iowa chooses to do potentially, Minnesota's front 7 has to take advantage of inexperienced tight ends, especially in the run game, pass game, whatever it may be. I would also say the two injuries on the defensive line that are important for Iowa, and we're going to see if these guys really give it a go against Minnesota. One is by the name of Joe Evans, why that name's important. He leads them in both pressures and hurries. He didn't practice at all last week, but he did play against Wisconsin. Now, he played against Wisconsin, but he didn't play what he normally plays. Looking at Joe Evans' snap count for them, he normally plays, say, 55, 60 snaps a game for the Iowa defense. Last week, he only played 25, and PFF didn't think too highly of him playing injured. Now, I would imagine Evans is going to give it a go, but he is banged up. And then another one would be from Marshall, Minnesota, one of Luke's favorite former haunts in YA Black. Hasn't practiced at any point this week per Iowa as of Wednesday. Didn't practice Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. Why that's important is he probably played the best game of his career thus far last week against Wisconsin. He had 5 pressures alone against that Wisconsin team. So I would argue 2 of their best guys in terms of generating pressure here recently are going to be banged up. So Minnesota's offensive line has got to take advantage of that and be physical.
All right, so let's transition. Unless you have anything else you want to hit on, we can talk some when the Gophers are on offense. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, so on the season, Iowa's defense is only giving up 14.9 points per game. They are only giving up 325 yards of total offense, 198 through the air, and then 127 on the ground. Conversely, the Gophers are averaging 21.7 points per game. They are averaging 313 yards of total offense, 132 through the air, and 180 on the ground, Ryan. We know this is a Phil Parker-led defense. He has and deserves every accolade that is thrown upon him, whether in an earned award or just like the praise he gets on social media. He has done amazing things with that defense. Seemingly year in and year out, they have a number of guys to replace. You're like, how are they going to ever replace a Jack Campbell? And then here they come in. Obviously they have Cooper DeJean, but then this Castro guy comes out of nowhere. And I remember, actually, I think he was recruited by the Gophers and he's been phenomenal. He was probably the player of the game in that Wisconsin game when I got to watch parts of that. Just impressive how their defense seems to continue to rise to the occasion year in and year out as they circle through, you know, players year in and year out.
Yeah. I mean, Phil Parker is one of the best defensive coordinators in college football, if not the best defensive coordinator in college football in terms of not being able to, I would say, have the money to go after the 4- and 5-star guys, but turning high 3-star and low 4-star guys into perennial NFL draft picks, whether that's in the defensive line, in the secondary, in the linebackers. I mean, yes, I know Cooper DeJean was a highly touted guy, top 150 guy coming out of high school. And I think there's been a lot of comparisons between a guy like Coy Parrish and Cooper DeJean with in terms of an immediate impact. But and they do what they do every single year, and that's play a very sound scheme defensively. And why they're able to do it and be so successful at it is their guys know how to play within that scheme. There's very few coverage busts or run fit busts. And that's what happens, I think, when you look at a guy like, say, Sebastian Castro. Like, he is their top-rated guy on defense via Pro Football Focus. Plays kind of a slot, I would say.
Almost like a hybrid linebacker, right?
Yeah, so you think of him as like that Jack Henderson type of spot in the Minnesota defense.
Flip Dixon, yeah, kind of like that.
I mean, you've seen him make key plays in the run game, like coming up and smacking Braylon Allen last week. He's also got 3 interceptions. But what I'm with a guy like Sebastian Castro, he's gotten his feet wet before this season, and he's an older player, 4th, 5th-year guy, I believe.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of why Iowa continues to be consistent every year, is because you look at some of the guys that are playing. I mean, these are, when you're in your 3rd, 4th, 5th, even in the COVID era, 6th year in the system, that's what you get, is you don't have as many mental errors as, say, what you're seeing from guys on Minnesota's defense, who are in their 2nd and 3rd years in the program and getting their feet wet for the first time. So that's just the beautiful part of a Phil Parker defense and why they've been so successful at it and why they've been so successful again this year. Now, I would say from Minnesota's perspective with this game, I think they're going to lean heavy on the run game once again. And that's something they've had a lot of success with, especially the last 2 seasons when Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving in 2021 were able to run for over 200 yards in Kinnick Stadium. And then last year, obviously, the Muhammad Ibrahim game where he runs for 250-plus yards. I would be somewhat surprised, I guess, if Minnesota is able to eclipse that 200-yard plateau again. Now, if they're going to do it, I would love to think that if Darius Taylor does make his return, he's not going to get 35 carries in this game. He would get somewhere on 20 to 23 because you've got a guy like Zach Evans, who has earned more opportunities from what he showed in the final two games before the bye. And you give him some around 13 to 15 touches as well. So just like it always does against Iowa's defense, Luke, it comes down to two things. Can you generate enough explosive plays? And if you can, you need to be able to finish drives against Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a huge talking point in my keys to the game. You think back to 2021, Minnesota kicks three red zone field goals. You know what doesn't beat Iowa? Field goals.
Field goals.
You look at last year's game. How does Minnesota run for 300 yards and lose a game? Because three possessions within the Iowa 35-yard line that resulted in a grand total of 0 points.
Yeah.
Empty possessions in Iowa territory are going to kill you, and you just can't have that happen in this game again.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, Kirk Ferentz famously said, I think was asked by BTN, what's an overrated statistic? And he says yardage, right? And I absolutely agree with him. I think EPA is a much better representation of a production and efficiency, but generally yardage, if you can't capitalize, yards mean nothing, right? And to your point, you know, ultimately field goals are going to be, you're going to be killed if the other team's scoring touchdowns, and you can get all the yardage in the world, but it doesn't mean anything. So we've lived that story a couple times in a row here, Ryan, and to your point, got to be able to score touchdowns, no question. Ryan, I don't know if you've looked ahead, but next week when the Gophers play Michigan State, it looks like it's going to be a cold game. And wouldn't it be
don't
nice?
Don't tempt me with a good time, Luke.
Wouldn't it be nice, Ryan, if you were able to put on, you know, maybe a nice maroon or gold jacket to sport there at TCF Bank Stadium?
Yeah, hypothetically, Luke, say maybe people should be refreshing homefieldapparel.com Friday morning, because hypothetically, Luke, maybe there's going to be a Minnesota Gopher bomber jacket release. They have teased it on social media a little bit.
I've seen those
cuffs.
Looks
like maroon and gold to me, Luke Buer.
It does. I've seen those cuffs. So for anybody that doesn't know, if you are looking to buy something at Home Field Apparel, please use the code GG23 to save 15% on your first order. Again, the promo code is GG23 to save 15% on your first order. Ryan, we got to talk about when the Gophers are on defense. Traditionally, the Gophers' defense has been really good against Iowa. Unfortunately, Iowa has been really opportunistic both on defense and scoring, but also they've been opportunistic. If you think back to, I think it was 21, finding some explosive plays, it was just enough for them, right? Or, you know, the defense just falls asleep a little bit. So let's get into some stats here real quick. On the season, the Gopher defense is giving up 26.7 points per game. They are giving up 373 yards of total offense, 235 of those through the pass, and then 137 of those on the ground. Conversely, Iowa is scoring a whopping, 20.9 points per game. Obviously, lots of people want to make fun of the fact that, you know, they need to be averaging 25 points per game. We're probably not going to focus on that a lot. I just think that they dug themselves their own grave with that. If you don't think so, sorry, we just disagree. But Iowa also averaging 247 yards of total offense, 116 through the air, and 130 on the ground, Ryan.
Yeah, this is a bad Iowa offense.
Exacerbated by injury, right? It's definitely exacerbated by injury.
Right, and that's where I'm very curious in this game. Like, as much as it is about Minnesota's offense versus Iowa defense, I think maybe the more interesting thing to me in this game is Joe Rossi getting off to a much quicker start against Brian Ferentz, because Brian Ferentz in the last four games against Joe Rossi's defense, it's fascinating, because he just has Rossi's number. I mean, it's something to where you go back to, say, 2019, that magical season.
Yeah.
Well, Iowa scores three touchdowns in the first three possessions.
Right.
Down 20-0. 2020, they score touchdowns on two of their first four possessions. 2021 and 2022, Iowa scores points on their first two possessions. So it's been like, why can't Minnesota get over the hump? Well, it's weird to say, but even with all the good defenses throughout those years, it's been Minnesota's defense that has struggled against what has historically been an inefficient offense, bad offense. And again, looking at this 2023 iteration of an Iowa offense, they're bad again. Now, why are they bad? To Luke's point, it doesn't help when you're on your backup quarterback, who is the third string at Wisconsin last year, in Deacon Hill. And Deacon Hill hasn't been any good. Their running backs, I think, are actually very talented, to be quite honest with you, and LaShawn Williams and Caleb Johnson. But it's just an offense to where if they don't break an explosive passing play, I don't know, or excuse me, explosive run play, like, I don't know how they're going to move the ball, because they refuse to throw to receivers, and their receivers haven't been good.
Yeah.
Like, Eric All led them with 21 receptions. He's now out. Luke Lachey, Brett, was second with 10. And you look at these receivers, Luke, they have 22 receptions in Iowa's first 7 games.
Yeah.
And I don't know who they're going to be throwing the ball to here, because it's been an issue getting the ball to receivers all year. Deacon Hill hasn't been accurate. You're down your top two pass-catching tight ends. You're going to be down to either Addison Estrella or Steven Stellanos. Like, again, Iowa's still tight end you. I get it. But I am just fascinated to see, with all the injuries that Iowa has had offensively, and their struggles since then, especially with Deacon Hill at quarterback to generate explosive passing plays, if points are going to come in this game, it's going to be on the running. To me, I'd be very surprised. I mean, if it comes through the air. But can Rossi, against a very depleted Brian Ferentz offense, finally get off to a better start, which means his offense doesn't have to be down 10-0, 13-0, 10-3 at the end of 20 minutes of play? Because if you can get up on Iowa, which is easier said than done, I'm well aware, I've covered a lot of Iowa-Minnesota games, but if you can get up on Iowa, this current iteration of an Iowa Hawkeye offense is not built at all to come from behind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at their running backs, you know, Caleb Johnson and LaShawn Williams both have obviously breakaway speed and can house one. They've both showed that both in the last 2 games.
60-plus yard runs in the last 2 weeks for touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly. Neither have a positive EPA per rush if you look at that stat.
Like, Iowa's running game, and I know that Jeffrey the Greek from Eyes on Big Ten and I are going to disagree on this. Iowa stinks at running the football. They've been better in recent weeks, and we'll get into that. But, like, Luke, we love to look at EPA. Like, can you give people the stats of Iowa's rushing attack via EPA?
So, yeah, from an EPA perspective, they've really not
expected points added. Yeah. For those of you who need to refresh your course.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, in general, like, they do have plays where they've had, you know, a very positive EPA. But, you know, in general, their EPA, you know, when rushing, you know, per game, their total EPA when rushing is negative. They're not great. Their EPA per play is less than one. You know, but they're able to find explosive plays. And like I said, their two best running backs are negative. Now, if you look conversely at, I got to pull up here real quick, you know, Darius,
you look at the last 2 weeks where Iowa's run for over 200 yards against Purdue with their running backs and Wisconsin with running backs. You still look at the EPA per rush in those games, they're in like the 25th percentile and the 41st.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of busts and a couple booms, which if you're the University of Iowa, that's how they do it. And again, it doesn't have to be complex for them, but if they don't get the explosive running plays, it just, I don't know how they move the ball more than 30 yards.
Yeah, in general, they it's kind of feast or famine. I know that they've been able to sustain some drives and, you know, amass some yards, but they're kind of, in some ways, they're a little bit empty yardage, right? Because they're not able to score off a lot of those. But if you look conversely, if you look like a Darius Taylor, you know, he actually has a positive EPA per rush, right? So his is 0.26. He also has home run potential too. And Mo was also positive, but Mo scored a ton of touchdowns, right? But in general, yes, this offense offense, I think they're better at running the ball this year. They've been able to show, this being Iowa, that they do have the home run potential. The challenge is, can they sustain drives? But they're also, Ryan, they're also incredibly opportunistic on their defense that sets their offense up. And you can even look back to some of like the Michigan State games. They'll go or to the Michigan State game. I think they got an interception or fumble. I can't remember the specific play, but then turned it into minus 3 yards and got a field goal, right? And that wins you football games. I'm not going to knock them for that. That's awesome. But yes, their rushing, frankly, hasn't been that great.
Yeah, and so how does Minnesota's defense stack up? I mean, Iowa is just banged up, and they're banged up at a lot of spots. But if you're Joe Rossi in this game, you cannot let Iowa do. I mean, last year it was that Sam Laporta tight end screen. In 2021,
that was an awesome play, right? Look, can we just admit that was an awesome play, that tight end screen to Sam Laporta? Well,
you had your linebackers all revved up, and then Iowa comes out in the first play from scrimmage and gets a 48-yard tight end screen to Sam Laporta.
Yeah.
And then in 21, it was Charlie Jones on a deep crosser, makes a diving catch 30-something yards down the field to put Iowa in the red zone. Then Justin Wally got beat on a Charlie Jones stop and go. And then LaShawn Williams makes three men miss behind the line of scrimmage. Or not LaShawn Williams, Keegan Johnson.
No, Caleb Johnson.
Three guys miss, right? And he gets an explosive play touchdown.
Yeah.
So what does it come down to, as it does each and every freaking week or each and every game? Or
yeah, explosive plays.
Explosive plays.
So one thing that I do want to note, though, you know, LaShawn Williams has been much better than Caleb Johnson, statistically speaking. He's averaging 6.1 rush yards per game versus Caleb Johnson. And he has had 74 carries to the 67, but he has been the better of the two backs for them. But ultimately I'm very interested to see, how they're able to manufacture kind of explosive runs. Ryan, I have really liked Game on Paper. I got to send those guys an email. They've done a phenomenal job, but I've been able to look back at their explosive runs. Ryan, almost all their explosive runs are coming out of 12 and 13 personnel, which you alluded to earlier. And right. The reality is they're down so many tight ends now. Like, are they going to be able to put together the 12 and 13 personnel? Maybe they'll have success and they'll go away from that otherwise, but and show something different that they haven't shown on tape. But that's where they found success, is in that 12 and 13 personnel.
Yeah, and they'll do zone scheme. Like, Minnesota loves to run inside, mid zone, outside zone, but they also do gap scheme, which means you're going to see counter power, aka offensive linemen and tight ends, pulling across the line of scrimmage. I would say thus far on LaShawn Williams and Caleb Johnson rushing attempts, it's something like, let's go rough percentages, 40% gap scheme, 60% zone. So they do a bit of both. But I'm with you. I'm more of a LaShawn Williams guy than Caleb Johnson,
yeah, for
but
sure.
Both have shown that they can break one if they get into that second, third level.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else when the Gophers are on defense? The big thing, you got to stop explosive plays, I think, for me.
And you got to get off to a faster start.
You
That's
do.
Just killed yeah. you the last 4 years. Get yeah. off to a faster start, explosive plays.
Yeah, and if you can get them really in the, you know, having to play from behind, that's obviously going to be to your advantage. The reality is like, we haven't seen the Gophers do that. And that probably starts with defense and offense. Ryan, it is once again that time of year where we're going to be out in our yards. We're going to be raking. We're probably going to have leaf blowers. It might be noisy. Your neighbor might have their leaf blower out. Wouldn't it be a good time to pop in a good podcast, pop in your earbuds, and have your Comply foam ear tips on so that you have a comfortable listening experience, but also a very well noise isolated experience?
I'm telling you, if you wear your earbuds a lot and you haven't yet take advantage of these Comply foam ear tips yet, memory foam, I don't know what more I have to tell you. But myself, Luke, my wife, Luke's wife, we've all got them. And I cannot tell you the look on my wife's face when she looked at me after a 3-hour flight home from Vegas and was like, my ears don't hurt. They were noise canceling with the baby behind me. They're life changing. I mean, they don't cause pain. They're memory foam. It's just, you've already invested in expensive earbuds. Now get the Comply foam memory foam ear tips at complyfoam.com. You're going to go there. You're going to support a local company from Oakdale, Minnesota. And these aren't expensive things to do. You've already invested in your expensive earbuds. Get some of these memory foam tips from Comfly. And when you get to checkout, use promo code GG23 and save 20% off your order. So it'll go to complyfoam.com, get to checkout, promo code GG23, save 20% today.
All right, time to get to some facts and figures for this game, Ryan. So this game is on NBC. It will be on October the 21st at 2:30 p.m. Looks like game time for the weather. It shouldn't be a terrible day.
Great day.
Yeah, doesn't look bad at all. So a 2:30 kick, it's going to be about 64-ish, 63 degrees.
Mid to late October day, if you were thinking about making the trip down to Kinnick, like, you can't ask for a better day of 60, mid 60, low 60s and very light winds. Like, it should be nice.
Yeah, I'm seeing some wind projections around like 15-ish miles an hour from the northwest.
I'm a little skeptical on those.
That's fine. But yeah, that's what I'm seeing here. I don't think rain's going to be a factor here in this specific game, but it should be a good day for some fall afternoon football. So make sure, obviously, you get out and check that out or get home and get to your TV and turn on NBC. We probably should get to the line here, Ryan, because this is an interesting thing. I think I saw that it opened at 35. Let me look. I did write this down. It originally opened, I did see very early openings at 35, was very, some others at 32.1. I can also see now, Ryan, that it is a 31.5 as we record this at Caesars, with Iowa favored by 3.5. They initially opened what I saw Iowa was a 5.5-point favorite. So, but when we consider this one, when we do our predictions, we will be doing 31.5 at -3.5 for Iowa.
I mean, the point I think that fans should take from this is, I know you've been scarred. I know you've seen a lot of Minnesota teams play Iowa in the last 24 years, or the last 10 meetings specifically, I believe, in Kinnick Stadium. It's a 3-point spread. Vegas says it's essentially 55-45 Iowa. I know Iowa's ranked. I know Iowa's 6-1. But I'm telling you, I think the Iowa teams from 10 years ago I'm not as high on this 2023 Iowa team as maybe some are.
Yeah, but they still could end up 11-1 if they win this game, which is wild.
Quite something.
Yeah, and they'll earn it, right? Like, you still got to play the games. And
you still got to play the games, and you still got to show up and play 60 minutes every single week.
Yep.
And is Iowa football maybe the least aesthetically pleasing brand of football in college football, arguably? But as long as you win the game,
it doesn't matter.
I'm sure Minnesota fans would tell you, I would take it.
I'll take it. Yeah, absolutely. I 100% would take it. All right, so let's get to your keys to this game, Ryan. I know we've probably already gotten into most of them, but just, you know, lay them out for us real quick.
So my key to the offense for Minnesota is they have to finish drives and not shoot themselves in the foot. Why hasn't Minnesota's offense been able to help them get over the hump against Kirk Ferentz in the Fleck era? Their inability to finish drives with touchdowns and sometimes even points in the red or green zone. Because I talked about it earlier, you go back to that 2021 game where Minnesota runs the ball well for most of the game, they struggled in the red zone. You have it first and goal at the Iowa 5, you kick a field goal. You get another possession before half in the red zone in Kinnick Stadium, you settle for a 31-yard field goal. You get a second half drive into the Iowa red zone, you kick a 29-yard field goal. Then you look at last year, most recently, you have three separate drives within the Iowa 35-yard line that resulted in a grand total of 0 points. You had Matthew Trickett miss a chip shot field goal from 34 yards. You have Mo Ibrahim fumble at the Iowa 13 with 5 minutes left. And even with that, you have, it's tied. You're going down the field. You're at the Iowa 33 in the game's final moments. And Nathan Kaliak-Manis tries to fit one into a tight window. It's deflected up into the air, and Jack Campbell essentially puts Iowa in a great spot to win the game, and they obviously did. So if you're going to get your first win in Iowa City since 1999, the story for Minnesota's offense has to be that they don't shoot themselves in the foot and they get at least one red zone trip that results in a touchdown. Because in the last 2 years, you've committed two turnovers and missed a chip shot field goal in this game, and all three of those should have resulted in points. And then you've had to settle for four other field goals in the red zone. Because you know what happens, Luke? Touchdowns beat Iowa, not field goals or empty trips when you get the ball in Hawkeye territory. Now, that's obviously easier said than done against a Phil Parker defense that has only allowed 7 touchdowns on 18 red zone trips all year. But here's the reality. If you want to get off the schneid against Ferentz, that's what has to happen. And I'm not here to talk poorly about Iowa's defense because it's more of the same as it is every single year. They're currently 2nd in college football in total EPA added on defense, and they're top 15 in EPA against the run and pass. But if there's been one area that you're going to point to that Iowa's just been okay in defensively, it's their rushing success rate allowed defensively. They rank 75th in college football, which means I would imagine that's going to tell PJ Fleck, let's see a heavy dose of Darius Taylor, Zach Evans, Bryce Williams. But if I'm Fleck, I'm giving Darius Taylor 20 to 25, Zach Evans another 15, keeps both of them fresh late into the second half in what is projected to be a low-scoring, tightly contested game. But as much as it is about the running game, Luke, it's also a prove-it game
for
Ethan Calliope-Manis.
For sure.
It's not if to me, but when Iowa loads up the box, Ethan has to hit his shots. He's got to deliver accurate balls. He's got to make some tight window throws in the short to intermediate game. And then, my goodness, does he got to hit on a deep shot. Because there will be a couple of opportunities in this game to hit on explosive passing plays. And they have to result in a positive outcome for Minnesota and not a Cooper DeJean or a Sebastian Castro interception. So the third-year signal caller cannot turn the ball over more than once if Minnesota's going to get out of here with a victory. But that's the recipe to me offensively. Don't turn the ball over and give Iowa's struggling offense excellent field position. And then when you get a chance to capitalize in Iowa territory, play aggressively and go for the touchdown, because settling for field goals, as we've seen the last 10 meetings in Iowa City, are not going to beat Iowa. Now, defensively, my key to the game is make Deacon Hill, the Iowa quarterback, beat you, and then you got to come out a lot quicker. Because for whatever reason, Brian Ferentz, the much maligned offensive coordinator for the Iowa Hawkeyes, has had the number of Minnesota defensive coordinator Joe Rossi. I talked about it earlier, but I'm going to let you know again. You look at these last 4 meetings between Rossi and Ferentz, here's what's happened. In 2019, Iowa scores 3 touchdowns on their first 3 possessions, and you're down 20-0. In 2020, in that COVID season, they scored touchdowns on 2 of their first 4 possessions. And then each of the last 2 years, they've scored points on their first 2 possessions. So essentially, every single game, Minnesota's been in an early hole here recently. Now, if you're going to win in a place where you haven't won in 24 years, a great place to start defensively is not putting your offense in an early hole. And I am fascinated to see what Brian Ferentz has schemed up, because as we've talked about, the Iowa offense has kind of revolved around their tight ends, as it has for a long time. Well, we sit here, tight end 1, Luke Lachey is out. Tight end 2, Eric All is out. Tight end 3, Addison Estrella is questionable for this game. And if he does play, he's going to be banged up. So you're looking at tight end 3, 4, 5, and 6. And why that's important is, to Luke's earlier point, you're going to see a lot of 12 and 13 personnel in this game. But how are they going to move the ball through the air when they haven't really been able to do it? Because Nico Reganey is the only Iowa receiver who caught a pass last week, and he caught 2 of them for 13 yards. So where it starts for them is a quarterback. Cade McNamara is out for this game, out for the rest of the season, which means the Wisconsin transfer, Deacon Hill. Big-bodied man, 6'3", 258 pounds. And since taking over in that Michigan State game as the guy, Luke, here's how are his passing stats. 37% completion percentage for 262 yards, 2 passing touchdowns, but maybe more importantly for Brian Ferentz, only 2 interceptions. So you're talking about a guy who's completing 37% of his passes for under 100 passing yards per game. It's pretty remarkable to me thinking about that, Luke, that he's missing on 63% of his throws, yet there's only been 2 interceptions so far. Now, if Iowa moves the ball down the field in this game, it's going to happen on the ground with LaShawn Williams and Caleb Johnson. Both of them have 60-plus yard scores in the last couple of weeks, but I'm just not here to tell you that the Iowa running game is that great. I mean, we talked about the EPA stats. They're not very good for the Iowa offense. Now, I understand that their tailbacks have run for over 200 yards in each one of the last 2 games, but it's a lot of busts and a lot of and not very few booms. And I would also say historically, Iowa tailbacks haven't found a lot of success against Minnesota's defense. You look at the last two games for Iowa tailbacks against Minnesota. Last year, they had 89 rushing yards. And in 2021, in Kinnick Stadium, they only ran for 68 yards. So if you're Joe Rossi, the plan's pretty straightforward to me. Stop the run and limit explosive plays. We talked about Charlie Jones and Keegan Johnson killing you in 2021. Last year, it was Sam Laporta and the Iowa tight ends. You can't keep it in a double move. Play action across the middle. Stay disciplined, because if you can make Iowa go 10, 12, 14 plays to score, so be it. But you can't get beat on an explosive, and you have to start the game fast. And maybe the point to end this, Luke, that we haven't talked about enough yet, that we will right now, don't lose the game because of your special teams.
Yeah.
If you look at Iowa's special teams for the umpteenth straight season, they are incredible and Minnesota's aren't. If you look at Pro Football Focus's special teams grades for both teams, Iowa's number one in the Big Ten with a 90.7 grade, which is among the best in college football. Minnesota grades out as the worst special teams unit in the Big Ten with a 58.3 grade. Now, why is Iowa so good and why are they 6-1? I was telling Luke this in the pre-production meeting, and I don't know that I have the stats to back it up, but Hawkeye punter Torrey Taylor has to lead the entire Iowa team in expected points added, because he has always been great.
Yes.
But he has taken it up to another level this year. What do I mean? He's averaging 45.6 yards per net punt, which is second in college football. It's also top in the Big Ten. And the remarkable thing within that is 39% of his punts have ended up within the 20. He has 18 punts inside the 20-yard line in seven games and only one touchback. And even if you want to go more nuanced, he has 20 punts of 50-plus yards in seven games this year. This might be rude, but here's the reality of it, Luke. Let's compare that to Mark Crawford's entire 3.5 years as a Gopher. Torrey Taylor has 20 punts in seven games in 2023. A 50-plus yards. Mark Crawford, in his 3.5 years as a Gopher, has 16. I mean, it's a clear advantage.
Oh, for sure.
For Iowa. And it's why they've been so successful, is Iowa kills you in field position. They can go 3 and out from their own 20 or 25, and Torrey Taylor can pin you within your own 20. So if I'm special teams coordinator Rob Wanger, I don't care if I was punting from their goal line. I don't care if they're punting from their 30 or midfield. I'm throwing Quentin Redding or whoever the punt returner is at the 15-yard line, because you're just going to need to field it from there. It's just the way it is. Now, on the flip side, Cooper DeJean has been a punt return extraordinaire for them. I mean, he's been incredible. No one has returned more punts in the Big Ten than DeJean, and he's averaging 13 yards per punt return with a return score. Now, Luke, I'm going to be quite honest with you. I'm having a hard time believing Mark Crawford's 38 to 41 yards in a cloud of dust are going to let DeJean show off his abilities. Yeah. But I can assure you he's going to try. So here's what I want from special teams in this game. And you tell me if this is too big of an ask. Iowa clearly has better weapons. Minnesota's got Drogon Kessage, and that's about it. Iowa has Drew Stevens. They have Torrey Taylor, and they have Cooper DeJean. But if you allow Iowa to just completely flip field position all game long, you're playing right into their hand, and you're just going to give up points. So here's my plea to you, special teams. Don't be one of the key reasons why, in a tightly contested rivalry game once again, that Minnesota doesn't find a way to come out with a victory.
Boy, I thought that was very good, Ryan. You did.
I thought
really
it was
nice
pretty
job.
Impassioned, to be quite honest with you. I'm going to give myself a little pat on the back.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. Yeah, you know, just to go back to the earlier conversation, just about EPA. You know, Minnesota, in terms of rushing, you know, is in the top, you know, third in EPA when rushing. Iowa, conversely, is, you know, as a team, is towards the, you know, the bottom few teams in rushing EPA. But man, against the run, they are elite, right?
They're really good.
They're really good defensively against the run. So it'll be an interesting matchup. Minnesota is not elite running the ball, but they are pretty, they're, you know, probably better than average. So it'll be interesting to see if they can amass some sort of, or I shouldn't say amass, but actually establish a running game. Ultimately,
Each
I think
team can establish a running game is likely going to win this game.
Yeah, probably. And it's going to come down to explosive plays, and those can come in any variety, right? Offense, defense, or special teams. I think that Iowa has the edge probably in definitely in special teams and definitely in defense. But it'll be interesting. Minnesota has been pretty opportunistic in turning teams over at times this year. Can they find a way to actually turn over Deacon Hill or a couple of these running backs? That'll be really probably the tail.
And then
of the
you
tape.
Just, I mean, I just alluded to it in the special teams section, but you have to give your offense some help because Torrey Taylor is going to flip the field.
Yeah.
He's arguably the best punter in college football. He's tremendous. So you have to get something from your return game. I mean, you have to get something that if he can give you 5 yards per return.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an extra 5 yards that, I mean, Mark Crawford's not going to be able to get with his leg, but I mean, field position is going to be critical in a game like this. And
absolutely.
You just can't be losing the field position battle all game long.
All right. Again, Iowa is a 3.5-point favorite at home at Kinnick. This game will be at 2:30. They're also the over-under is also 31.5. On the season, Ryan, you and I are basically putrid at this. Nobody should ever listen to what we're saying. on the season, you're 2-4 relative to the over-under, and against the spread, you're 2-3-1. Conversely, I'm 2-4 against the over-under, and I'm 1-4-1 against the spread. My lone success against the spread was the Eastern Michigan game. So really take this information for what it's worth. Coming into this game this season, we actually both picked this as a win, Ryan. You had 20-17, which would have been an over. And I had 24-21, which would have been an over relative to the spread. So I'll let you go first.
Oh boy. All right. Well, I'll reiterate again. I think Iowa's offense is in such a tough spot right now because of injuries. You're without your star transfer quarterback, your top two pass catchers and Lachey and all. You're in your tight end 3, 4, 5, 6. And I'm a believer that the only way Iowa scores points in this game are with their running game. I know that. Rossi knows that, and I'm just having a hard time seeing them score more than 13 points unless Iowa gets a defensive or special team score, which is incredibly possible in a game like this. Now, I'm here to tell you, the Hawkeye defense is great. Their special teams, they're great, just like they are every year. And Iowa's going to be favored in every single game left in their schedule going forward, as Minnesota, I would argue, is their most difficult opponent left. So why am I going to pick Minnesota here? Well, I trust their running game more than Iowa's. Both quarterbacks haven't been good, and I'd say Iowa's defense certainly has performed better than the Gophers, but I just trust Minnesota's offense in being able to sustain more drives and not turn over the ball, I would say. I mean, if Minnesota decides to shoot themselves in the foot again with a special teams gaffe or a bad turnover, it'll be another game of what if. But I think this is finally the game that Minnesota has the ball bounce their way. Minnesota gets their first victory in Iowa City since 1999 in what I am predicting as a barn burner, 16-13 Minnesota.
Oh, you took the under the 31.
I am taking the under on 31.5.
All right. Interesting. I'm pretty close to you. Just for comp's sake, I did look at you and I both like Bill Connelly. S&P had this game at 22-15, which would be an over and quite a bit over in favor of Iowa. I am going to take this game. I'm also going to stick with my early season prediction. I'm going to go with 17-16 Minnesota, and that will be an over. So you had 13-16.
Or 16-13.
16-13.
Again, I have so little confidence in the Iowa offense. Now, is it entirely possible that you see a script like last week where...
Yeah, absolutely. Totally possible.
Know, where Iowa scores 15 points and they don't even run a single play from within the Wisconsin red zone? Absolutely. It's how Iowa wins games. Iowa win games as ugly as possible, and there's nothing wrong with that. I just think it finally catches up to them because I think Iowa's good. I don't think Iowa's great. And I think Minnesota off a bye week hopefully has a couple of things at their disposal. And they finally are able to get the Floyd of Rosedale back to Dinky Town.
Ryan, I got to imagine as many hunters like you, they're getting their UTVs out. That's something that Burns Insurance can help cover, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, whether it's your UTV or even driving home during the bye week from my hunting land, my father hit a deer. And you know what? He had a great insurance agent that's able to work with him. So again, he's licensed in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So if you think you're paying too much for your home, your auto, your commercial, your UTV, whatever the insurance may be, he's an independent insurance agent that can pit you against 20 different companies to get you the best coverage at the best price. Plus, you'll be helping out a fellow Gopher fan. So check him out today at insurancebyburns.com. Look up the phone number there, or you can just email him if you want to go that route at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Okay, let's talk a little bit of Big Ten. We didn't get a chance to break down those games. I don't think we'll do that. We'll just go into the games ahead of us, Ryan. But if you want to give any just high-level observations of the bye week that we missed, obviously we've already kind of touched on Iowa and Wisconsin.
We can just get to it in each one of these games. I mean, starting with the first game, which was big noon on Fox. It is Penn State, number 7 team in the country, traveling to the Horseshoe to take on the number 3 Ohio State Buckeyes. Ohio State are 4.5-point favorites. I give my prognostications, Luke Buer,
so
what do you think?
I think the majority of people actually think Penn State probably wins this game. I was a little surprised that Penn State got 4.5, even though they're at home. I thought it would be even a little bit
Ohio
closer
State
than that. Ohio State got 4.5 at home. I was also a little bit surprised on the over-under. But then again, I thought about the close game that Ohio State won against Notre Dame, and maybe that over-under is probably right. I do think that Ohio State is going to find a way. I think people are kind of sleeping on them a little bit. I really like Penn State, but James Franklin just doesn't have the track record in these kind of big games. And I don't know. I'm not sure I see it. Maybe Drew Aller proves me wrong, but I think Ohio State's going to find a way.
It comes down to which quarterback do you trust more, Kyle McCord or Drew Aller? I mean, I know that Ohio State's also banged up. Emeka Abuka didn't play. They're one of their best receivers last week. I don't think either of their top two running backs played last week either. Now, I would imagine that they were probably pretty close to playing. They wanted to make sure they were healthy for this game. But this is a huge game for James Franklin. I mean, and we've been talking about Penn State for, it feels like, 18 months in terms of last year. They were a great football team. They weren't elite, though. I mean, they beat every other team besides Ohio State and Michigan by 25 points, but they lost in those two big games. So if Penn State wants to be taken seriously as a college football playoff contender, it's going to involve going into the Horseshoe and beating what I don't think is a great Ohio State team. It's still a good Ohio State team, but it's a big test for Penn State.
All right. The other 11 o'clock game on BTN features the Scarlet Knights of Rutgers taking on Indiana. And you know what Rutgers is playing for here, right, Ryan?
Bowl eligibility.
They are 5-2. I think a lot of people said, are they going to find a path? And here they are. They've got a chance. They're taking on Tim Allen's Indiana Hoosiers. Tom Allen. Tim Allen.
With me on that, which, by the way, I don't feel good about it. We were talking about it at the Gopher press conference today. I didn't realize Tom Allen's buyout is $20 million.
Yes, I'm like, so in.
Yeah, you're going to probably win that bet that he doesn't get canned by Halloween.
All right, so Rutgers is a 5-point favorite with a over-under of 40. This is in Indiana. Can they play spoiler against the Scarlet Knights? They have at times found ways to be competitive, but they just can't sustain it, Ryan.
I have more trust in Minnesota East, especially in what potentially is going to be some weather happening in Bloomington, Indiana that weekend. The muddier and muckier I think it is, the more that goes towards Kirk Shiraka and Joe Harris-Simiak's team.
All right, so Wisconsin travels to Illinois to play the Illini. This is a 2:30 game on FS1. The line is Badgers 2.5 with an over-under of 42. And we have to hit on the fact that Illinois was able to pull off the upset at Maryland 27-24. Mike Loxley's team did some things that they tend to do as the season goes on. They found a way to lose.
death taxes and Mike Loxley looking great through the first five games of the year in September. And then when the temperature starts to get a little bit chillier, that team starts to fall apart a little bit. I was pretty surprised Illinois was able to go in there. Now, when you look at this game, I love this game. I mean, it's the Jim Leonard revenge game. Jim Leonard is now an analyst for Illinois. You know, he's been trying to game plan against Wisconsin behind the scenes for the last 6-7 weeks. It's Wisconsin without Tanner Mordecai, their starting quarterback, who is potentially out for the year after getting hand surgery on Sunday. I think he's going to be iffy at best, potentially, from Minnesota's game with him in about 6 weeks, but we'll find out then. And then I know Braylon Allen's also banged up. So you've got Illinois with a little bit of momentum. You've got Brett Bielema against his old team, Jim Leonard against his old team, Wisconsin with a brand new quarterback, Braylon Allen a little banged up. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked at all to see Illinois be able to do something here in Champaign.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You got to wonder if Illinois might be getting a little bit better, finally being able to gel. But yeah, in Wisconsin, it's going to be hard to replace now. Chez Malusi and Mordecai. I don't know. They're searching for an identity.
Braylon Allen to play, but he's already banged up. And that's where...
Yeah.
This is what we talk about every single year with Wisconsin. It's the fourth straight year they're the preseason favorite, and it's going to be the fourth straight year they don't win the West. And it's the fourth straight year with Minnesota playing them at the end of the year. It's just going to come down to who's healthy and who's not.
Yeah.
So we'll see what Braylon Allen looks like with another 125 carries on his belt before that Minnesota game.
All right. You've got the 3-3 Northwestern Wildcats taking on the 3-3 Nebraska Cornhuskers. Both are 1-2 in conference. This is a 2:30 kick in Lincoln. The over under is 41 with Nebraska favored by 11.5. Looks like a beautiful day for some afternoon football in Lincoln.
I believe Nebraska came out and said that Heinrich Harburg is going to be their starting quarterback going forward after Jeff Sims is now, I think, finally healthy.
Makes sense.
Interesting, just because, he was the transfer. You put everything behind. He obviously wasn't any good. And I'm glad to see the assumption of rational coaching continues to be with Harburg. Now, I would imagine that, Nebraska is probably going to continue to lean on their run game. And I'm going to imagine it's going to work because I'm not the biggest Northwestern guy in the world. So, Nebraska's looking like they got a shot at bowl eligibility if they can get through this one this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. But we all know that Northwestern can play spoiler. That's for sure. A 6:30 kick will feature in-state rivals Michigan playing Michigan State.
Minnesota's next opponent after this week, Michigan State.
And currently, Michigan is a 24-point favorite with a 46 over-under. You know, obviously the old adage is that, when it's a rivalry, you throw all logic out the window and they'll find a way to keep it close. I'm not sure. I think Michigan's that good.
I think if you're a Minnesota fan here, you're hoping that Michigan State keeps this thing close into the second half, but that Michigan just beats the crap out of them physically so that maybe they're a little banged up coming into Huntington Bank Stadium next weekend where it's projected to be... We'll see what the precipitation is like, if there is any, but it's projected to be in the 30s.
Yeah.
So you're going to want to be the healthier team in that kind of a matchup. So I would imagine Michigan eventually rolls in this game, but it's certainly one where you want Michigan to be as physical as possible if you're Minnesota.
All right, so we look forward to this game against Iowa. It should be a fun test, maybe breaking an old kind of curse, if you want to call it that, just ending that drought in Kinnick. We want to thank you again for listening to the podcast. Thank you for supporting our sponsors and making all this possible. We're having a lot of fun doing it. We'll be back to break down this game, win, lose, or draw. Thanks for listening, and go Gophers.